We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
It is indeed time for the Mike Tomlin News Conference, sponsored by CGR Wholesale Roofing and Siding Supply Center. And here's the coach.
Good afternoon. As always, I'll start with a quick synopsis of the last performance. And really, the perspective that I had post-game kind of remains to be the perspective that I have, you know, as I sit here today. You know, there's disappointment and frustration that comes with the outcome, but it's not anything about the outcome that's mystical from my perspective or our perspective. And so, although it's frustrating, I think that we're all motivated to address it and to continue to work to do some of the things that we need to do to change the outcome of these games. It's a splattering of things, but oftentimes it is in the National Football League. There's a fine line between winning and losing. If I go back and look at some of the things that transpired in that game, I thought the penalties were a component of play. We're penalized in the special teams game. That didn't help our cause from a field positioning standpoint. I thought some of our drives, particularly in the first half, were slowed down by penalties, things that are within our control. We got to get better in those phases. From a defensive perspective, I thought our inability to get off on possession downs in the fourth quarter was significant. And we've looked at that, and, you know, we sustained some in-game injuries and so forth in the secondary that made some of those possession down things challenging in terms of the things that were at our disposal. Obviously, we went into the game down a couple of guys, and then some things happened in the game. And when we looked at the tape, you know, we just weren't tight enough in those circumstances. And so there's some lessons to be learned from that. Oftentimes lessons are painful ones. Your ability to close out games from a defensive perspective often define you, your unit, and your team in the NFL. And so we acknowledge that. It's interesting. It's the second game we've kind of been in within four that we had a myriad of defensive injuries that have kind of cost us timeouts within the last 2 minutes of the game. So it's been an attrition component of it that you have to acknowledge, although you don't seek comfort in it. We got to continue to coach all parties involved. You guys know the philosophy that we live by. Either you're a starter or a starting and waiting, the standard of expectation doesn't change. And so we got some work to do in terms of being able to live up to the standards as we deal with some of the things that come with playing football. And attrition and injury and the loss of people and personnel is just a component of it. It's not only for us, but it's also for those we play against. And so we got to be better in those areas as we look at it. In regards to the quarterback position, we made a change in game, and Kenny will start this week. And I just want to talk about that for a moment. We made the change. Obviously, Mitch's performance was a component of the decision, but not the only component of the decision. And I just want to be really clear there. Oftentimes, the quarterback position gets too much credit, too much blame. We haven't moved the ball fluidly enough to our liking. We hadn't put enough points on the board. The quarterback is a component of that, but not the only component. We've all got to absorb the responsibility that comes with what we haven't done, particularly in that phase, including myself and starting with myself. And so when you make a quarterback change, you're really sensitive to that component of it, because I don't want to dump the responsibility of what transpired at Mitch's feet. That's not fair to him. He's played better than that description, but we haven't. And so in an effort to be better, in an effort to score more points, in an effort to move the ball more fluidly, we decided to go to Kenny in the hopes that he would provide a spark for us. You know, we felt that not only in terms of our ability to move the ball, but just in terms of energy. And so hopefully that's a catalyst for us as we try to move forward and change the outcome of some of these games, man. Our business is winning, and we're about our business, and we've lost three games in a row, and we got a formidable opponent this week. And so a lot of things to be excited about, a lot of things to have urgency regarding. And that's just a component of it. And so I thought that that was deserving of extended time and discussion there. We have no reservations about what Kenny is going to be capable of in terms of our schematics. Obviously, we have a level of concern about the environment we're taking them into. But, you know, you have a level of concern about any quarterback that you take into that environment versus that defense and that venue. And so that's a component of it, but not a significant component of it outside the usual in terms of respecting it. Kenny has shown us maturity at every point throughout this process. He's older than most rookies, and that was obviously leading up to the draft process. The things that we valued in him from a draft perspective, fluid and quick decision-making, pro-like anticipation and things of that nature have proven to be true. That's why we took him when we were given the opportunity to do so. Since we've acquired him, he's done nothing but fortify that thought process and make some plays during team development and during the preseason. And he's continually gotten better even after the regular season has started. Those of us that are here day-to-day from a practice standpoint know and understand that and see the progress. And equally as important, see his mature and professional approach to readiness. And so we're excited for him and about him, but we got work, all of us. It's a collective. We're all responsible. And so we prepare with an edge knowing that. And from an injury standpoint, got a few things to talk about. Witherspoon, you should anticipate him still being out. We got some other guys monitoring some health-related things. Edmonds is in the concussion protocol. Mika has a knee that needs to be managed and watch him progress throughout the week. Cam Sutton has a groin, a hamstring. And Cam Hayward has an elbow and an ankle. So we got some things to manage. But I don't necessarily view that as a negative, to be quite honest with you. It might minimize these guys some during the week, but what it will do is provide more reps for those that are playing in place of them. And oftentimes, when things happen in-game, those guys that are playing in place of people aren't afforded the opportunity to ready themselves. And so I'm going to view it as a positive. I'm going to focus our energies on the guys that are working. We're going to remain hopeful about the inclusion of these guys, and we're going to let their participation and the quality of their participation as we get toward the latter part of the week be our guide in terms of determining whether or not they'll be available to us. In the meanwhile, man, we're really going to focus on some of these guys that get an opportunity to elevate and participate and make sure that they're on the screws. We got the type of detail and communication we need from them to put together a good collective in an effort to go up there and do the job, man. We've been in this environment before. We've been in stadiums versus this group a lot here in recent years. We know them. They know us. The venue is a component of the matchup. We opened out up there last year in week one. On the offensive side of the ball, you better deal with Josh Allen and his unique skill set. He's an elite passer. He's an elite runner or creator. It's challenging. It's simple mathematics, you know. They got some receivers like Diggs that require attention that could mean two people, whether it's zone or man schematically. Anytime you're facing a quarterback, like Josh, oftentimes it means five rushers. And so do the math, man. When you got that type of talent on the perimeter, when you got that type of talent in the pocket at quarterback, it makes defense challenging. You wish you could utilize 12 or 13 guys. We don't, so we got to be thoughtful about how we deploy our 11. We got to change some things up. We got to keep them off balance. We got to know what it is that we're doing. If we're out of place, there's going to be consequences for it. That's just the reality of it. We got some challenges on that side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, talking about Buffalo's defense, man, they got quality players in their front. The acquisition of Von Miller is obviously significant, but they've had some high-quality guys. They've drafted guys high in the draft there for a long time up front and built their unit that way on the second level. You can't say enough about Milano and Edmonds, man. They're all situations players. They make plays for them at all levels. They blitz, they cover, they run game tackle sideline to sideline. They got a veteran secondary from a safety tandem and nickel perspective. There's some change over at corner, but they're doing things very similar to how they've done it in the past. Johnson is significant at the nickelback position. They play nickel versus almost all personnel groups, and that speaks to the versatility and the confidence that they have in Johnson. You know, the Ravens were playing in some big personnel groups last week in the ways that the Ravens do. And, boy, they sat in nickel. You saw Johnson playing in the box and doing so well. He could cover wide receivers. He can cover tight ends. He can fit in the run game. That versatility, along with the versatility at the safety position. DeMar has played really good for him back there at the safety spot. They got continuity. They know what it is they're doing. They communicate well. They minimize big plays. For example, and through four games thus far, they've given up, I think, 6 runs of 10 yards or more and 10 passes of 20 yards or more. That's got to be kind of tops in the league. They minimize chunks. They make you earn it. You better stay on schedule. You better not be highly penalized. Those are some of the things that we're talking about as we formulate our plan here at the early stages. But again, none of it will be kind of a surprise. They do what it is they do. I'm sure they'll say similar things about us because we've just been in the stadium against each other so often here in recent years. It's like a division game, if you will. I know we're going to have that level of urgency. I know we're going to have that level of respect for the environment that the Bills Mafia is capable of creating. And so I'll pause there, man, and open it up for questions.
Mike, last week here you had said that, you know, you wanted the guys to tune out the noise, remain committed to the plan. Was there any one particular play or plays or incident that you changed the plan?
No, I don't know if it's any one particular thing. It's just how I felt and how we felt in-game. I think we also talked last week or about, you know, when you're there, how do you know when you're there? And I said, you just kind of know when you're there. And I think that's probably the perspective that I have on the decision-making component of it.
When we talked to you after the Cleveland game, you said definitively, no, we're not changing anything. You said you felt it in the game, but was there any point in the 10 days or how did your thinking change in that?
It was just what I outlined over here. We weren't moving it fluidly enough. We need to move it more fluidly. We need to score points. That's just the feeling I had in stadium last week.
Mike, what did the tape show you? How would you evaluate that half play from Kenny?
From Kenny? Like I mentioned, I thought he provided a spark for us. I thought we moved it more fluidly. I thought we put some points on the board, obviously. It wasn't a perfect half of play. We turned the ball over some. You can't do that. You know, and he's a young guy. He's going to grow throughout this process. But make no mistake about it, we're not grading him on a curve. He's not grading himself on a curve. There's an expectation of quality play and playing to win.
Mike, from that emotional standpoint, you've used the word spark a number of times, as have the players in relation to Kenny going in. I think a lot of people hear that and think singular within the moment of the one game. But how sustainable is that energy boost potentially for the next, you know, month?
You know, I think he provided a spark in game that is tangible, that we saw and could feel and appreciate. But I think it goes beyond that. I think that he's kind of provided that spark since we've been stepping in stadiums. It's just a component of who he is as a player and a quarterback, the things that he does, how he communicates, his competitive spirit. I think it's a positive catalyst for us.
Do you see him naturally being more aggressive than Mitch, just in the plays, that the risks he's willing to take and the way in which he plays?
I think the tape and his play will tell that story over the course of time, obviously. You know, playing and speculating about playing are two different things.
Who will be his backup this week?
Mitch.
How did Mitch handle the news about the change this week?
Man, the way that you would expect, man, there's disappointment. He's a competitor. He's a professional. He's a hard and diligent worker. He wants to be a positive contributor to our efforts and the reason why we're successful. And, you know, the change doesn't afford him an opportunity to do those things. And so, you know, it's something to absorb. We respect it. Just in the same ways that we respect some of the things that Mason Rudolph has gone through through this process, where he used to be a backup and he's been a number three to this point. And so whenever you're working as a collective, oftentimes there's setbacks for individuals within the collective as you pursue what it is that we all need. And being a part of a team, I think we all understand that. But at the same time, we don't want to discount it or be desensitive to it because we're in it. We're sensitive to the situation that Mitch is in. While at the same time, we got a game to get ready for, and we got a ready Kenny. And so I'm sure that Mitch is going to be professional. Mitch has been a part of that program in Buffalo. I'm sure he's going to be a positive contributor to our readiness and provide awesome insight throughout the preparation process and be a big help to Kenny. I just appreciate the professionalism that all our quarterbacks have displayed throughout this process. All of them, Mason, Kenny, Mitch, they've been a pleasure to work with.
Mike, because of where you're playing and the fact that Mitch was there last year, did you give any thought of coming
yes,
back to Mitch?
I did.
Are there aspects to the offensive scheme that are unique to Kenny that are not to Trubisky?
I think that'll be told over the course of this upcoming weeks with how we play from a personality standpoint and the things or the concepts that we choose to highlight in stadium. Oftentimes you can go into a game with a list of 120 to 160 plays, and you know what you pull off that ready list oftentimes dictates what is perceived as your personality. And so the plays that we pick off for Mitch might be slightly different in some ways than Kenny, and so that will be revealed over the course of the upcoming weeks, the differences that you ask about.
Mike, the quarterback position is unique in football, where you're not only just the guy throwing the football, you're kind of a de facto leader. What have you learned about Kenny in the pre-draft process from the time you've had him about the type of leader he's going to be for this football team?
You know, I've watched him grow in those ways in a neighborly sort of way during his time at Pitt. It's something that you could see that he consciously pursued and was thoughtful about, while at the same time it's a natural act. And I think that that's something that all quality leaders, particularly at the quarterback position, have. They better be intentional, because there's a myriad of responsibilities that come with being them. But it aids them when it's a natural act and they have an inclusive personality. They're good communicators and listeners and so forth. And he's displayed all of that.
Mike, is keeping Mitch as the backup a way to show him that, hey, it wasn't all on you, and to keep him involved and engaged as opposed to giving Mason the half this week?
No, he's deserving of that, and I don't know that it's any messaging associated with it other than the fact that, you know, he's the next best option for us this week as we ready ourselves to play.
Does Mitch still go out? I know this is nitpicky, but as a captain, would he still go out for coin tosses?
Yes. Yes.
Look, you have to be, I know there's dynamics associated with a quarterback being taken number one. To use the word again, do you have to be definitive, steadfast, resolute for a long chunk of time moving forward here with Kenny because of that? Or is this a week-to-week thing with quarterbacks here?
You know, when we make decisions, man, we don't anticipate blowing in the wind. That's not how we are. While at the same time, we understand that what transpires after that decision-making often determines how we move forward. We're optimistic and thoughtful in our thought process. We believe in Kenny. We're getting ready to play this week, and we're singularly focused on preparing for and ultimately playing a good game and winning up there in Buffalo, and really don't have a lot of thoughts beyond that.
Mike, is there one particular area where your defense has let you down in the last three games by not getting off the field and giving up leads?
Possession down, football. You know, I really felt it, but I felt it throughout. But particularly in the fourth quarter of that game, you know, we were challenged there with some of the things schematically we were able to do and the collection of guys that we had on the grass. It didn't feel comfortable. We got to get better at you know, painting our barn red if we got red paint based on the people that we have available to us in those moments.
You were challenged from a personnel perspective as well in terms of some of those letdowns, correct?
Yeah, but again, we don't seek comfort in that. You know, like I say, attrition is a component of ball. And so you look at the collection of men that you have available to you, and you formulate a plan, and you divide the labor up in an effort to secure victory. And that's our business. And so we don't waste a lot of time lamenting about who's unavailable. I know every time I come into this setting, you guys ask me about TJ's lack of availability and its impact. We can waste all day sitting around talking about the impact of him not being available, just like I'm sure the Rams could sit around and talk about what if, you know, Aaron Donald wasn't available. We better spend our time talking about the guys that are available to us, how we divide that labor up in the best effort to minimize those opponents that we're preparing for this week. We got some big challenges, man. We got guys that merit two-man attention like Diggs. We got a quarterback with big-time mobility that oftentimes includes rushing more than four. And so there's some mathematical challenges I like to describe when you face a group with so many talented components like this Buffalo Bills group.
Mike, when you're dealing with Allen and his ability to make plays off platform, specifically there was a play against Baltimore where it was a fourth down and it looked like Owe and Humphrey both kind of had him dead to rights and he's able to beat them both. Are there coaching techniques or principles that you can give guys to try to deal with those situations?
Yeah, build a fence. Oh. You know, those are his talents. You know, it's just like trying to tackle Lamar Jackson. You know, I was watching them on the other side of the ball deal with Lamar. And when you're dealing with guys at the quarterback position that have arm and leg talent, it's challenging. And so, you know, you can coach all you want about near leg and building the fence and all of those things, but when they get you in one-on-one circumstances, they're going to win a lot of those. They've been winning a lot of those at every level that they've ever played at since Little League, I would imagine.
Mike, what has DeMarvin Leal been able to do for you when you put him out there on the edge like you have?
He's a big guy that's played in that space. He played in that space at A&M. He's active. He's growing every week. He's getting better. He's got some talent. We're excited about the overall trajectory of Leal.
Mike, with the injuries in the secondary, can you discuss how James Pierre has progressed since he lost the job last season? Is he ready to assume a bigger role if there's injuries?
We'll see. That's what I mean when I talk about the lack of availability this week from a practice standpoint. When you miss guys in practice, it really gives other guys an opportunity to show their readiness, make some plays, show some detail and communication that's associated with varsity ball. And he's done a nice job. He'll be given an opportunity to display those things this week, along with a guy like Josh Jackson and others. And so we'll put together a formula and see who best represents themselves and does the things that we need them to do during the course of the week. And we'll divide the labor up at the end.
Mike, I know that TJ's still in IR and he has a couple weeks left on there, but just what is his progress like at this
point? He's on IR. He has a couple weeks still left on there.
At safety, if you have without Edmonds and Fitzpatrick, how does that alignment go? Where does Norwood fit in? Does he slot in better at one of those
points? He's obviously one of them. We're going to work all the safeties. If those two guys aren't practicing, all the other ones are working. And so it's not about picking and choosing. All of the remaining safeties will get legitimate work this week, and they'll have an opportunity to show detail and playmaking and so forth, and we'll divide the labor up at the end of the week.
Mike, what goes into Kenny Pickett as a rookie coming in his first appearance, being able to make adjustments at the line and calls at the line, whereas it was said that Mitch wasn't given as much liberty to do that earlier in the season?
I don't know that I agree with that component of the statement. So what's the question?
What goes into him as a rookie being able to make such calls in a game, you know, in his first experience, the practice and the work he has to do off the field to be ready for that moment?
He's football sharp. He works at it. He's mature behind his years. Those are the reasons why we have a level of comfort with some of the things that he's able to do relative to what you would expect from a rookie perspective.
Mike, are any of the guys who were placed on IR preseason now eligible to come off, like Austin, like KC, would they come off this week?
Austin is eligible to come up this week, and by come up, I mean you get an opportunity to start the 21-day window to practice and make judgments from there.
How is Calvin Austin progressing, I think, now that he's eligible to come off IR?
Again, I think that's what I just gave Stan is the information that I have. He's eligible to come off this week. That starts his 21-day window. The quality of his work and what he's able to do within that window oftentimes determines what you do from there.
Mike, when Kenny was debating whether to come out after 20, you know, he decided that he heard his draft stock wasn't that high, so he went back and obviously it paid off for him. What did you see from that year from 20 to 21 that's...
I don't know that I evaluated it in that way, to be honest with you. I look at who declares for the draft, who's draft eligible, and then I start my process. I get on a moving train from a coach's perspective. Maybe the scouts have a different perspective because they scout in the fall. My process starts in the winter and spring after the season ends, and most of the time decisions are made about whether to enter the draft or not enter the draft, and so I don't waste a lot of time covering or studying guys that have decided to go back to school.
Well, I would imagine you would have casually seen components of his play, you know, since he's next door in on Saturdays.
So. Casually, but not so much so that I can draw a professional analysis in the ways that you asked.
Where's your comfort level with Gunner and punt return now that he's put two balls on the
ground? Not very high, to be quite honest with you, man. You can't put two balls on the ground in four games and feel good about it. Two is a pattern in the National Football League. You know, we say that often. We say that about runners in ball security. Whether it's four games or eight games or 12 games, two in our business is a pattern. And so we got some work there this week and some decisions to make, and he's got to get us to a level of comfort, and we look at some other options as well.
Mike, last week Najee Harris had some interesting comments where he said he made a point really to say, I don't want you to focus on the offensive line. It's me that deserves the criticism. How do you evaluate the run game and Najee's performance within it?
Improving every single week. But we're not graded on improvement, we're graded on results, and so they need to continue to improve in the ways that they have in an effort to change the outcome of these games.
What do you think it is about Von Miller that's allowed him to be so consistent for so long through age and injury?
He's Von Miller. You know, some guys are aliens visiting from another planet, you know, and that's just the reality of it. Man, in the National Football League, man, you got to respect all these guys, right? They're all freaky. But some guys are even freaky in our setting, and he's just one of those guys. He always has been since he came out of A&M, moving and changing and running like a corner. he needs no endorsement from me. His resume is his resume. Kudos to Von Miller. Tip of the cap to Von Miller. And I'll say this. We talk about his talents often, but this guy's a scientist. He works at his craft. He encourages, trains others to do so that are like him. That Edge Rush Summit and things that he's a critical component of, I got a lot of respect for. I spent a week with him in Orlando when we coached the Pro Bowl, and just to see the professional and scientific approach that he takes to his craft, even in a setting like that. That guy was the reason we won that Pro Bowl game. You know, I know we don't spend a lot of time talking about the outcomes of Pro Bowl games, but, man, Von Miller took over that Pro Bowl game and gave us all quality checks, man, and we appreciate his efforts.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Appreciate it.
Fabulous ending there, but I'm trying to picture now that Kenny Pickett's the guy, assuming there's no clerical error on the depth chart, right, Ron. I'm trying honestly here to picture Mitch Trubisky going out for the coin toss. What are we doing here? Why would he still be a captain?
He's still the captain, I guess. That's who his teammates voted him. You know, it's more of a ceremonial thing. I guess you don't have to send him out, right? He's still the captain. But, I mean,
would you send him out? I don't think I would.
I don't know. To me, it's not that big of a deal, but I get what you're saying.
Is it a big deal that Tomlin thought about going back to Trubisky? That was a question from Jerry Dulac.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did think about it. Yeah,
that's interesting to me.
I have to ask again.
He didn't expand on that.
What's happening here? Is he convicted with Pickett here? Is this, if Pickett doesn't play well, is he? I mean, Flores went back and forth between Tua and Fitzpatrick, right?
He did.
He didn't shoot down the idea that it could be week to week, too. Whenever he was asked about that, he didn't say definitively, no, we're sticking with Kenny for the foreseeable future.
But he was pretty high on Pickett, though.
He was.
Pretty high on him.
He staked his professional future on him, really, at least as far as success goes.
Making him number one, right.
He must love him. 412-928-9370, 928-9370. Let's talk about all of this. Moving forward, how long for Kenny Pickett? Is this simply it? Trial and error period. Even if he has a horrible game, is he going to be the guy moving forward? Should he be? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the fact that Trubisky's going to be the backup. I'm going to ask these guys next. If you're Trubisky, are you offering every single shred of help you can going into this game? You're a little ticked off. You're going to keep something back. Keep something in the wallet here. We'll talk about it on Cook and Joe coming up next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.